Welcome to Big Talk for Breeders. My name is Michael Doherty, a show jumping breeder from the west of Ireland. And in each episode, I'll bring you a new interview with a successful sport horse breeder. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Now let's get started. This is episode number 33 with German show jumping couple Eva Bitte and Marco Kutcher. I first interviewed them in April 2022, but unfortunately an issue with my recording equipment resulted in the entire interview recording as silence. I was incredibly disappointed, as you can imagine, and it actually took me several months before I did another interview after that. I'm very grateful that Eva and Marco have given me another opportunity to do the interview 2.5 years on, and they approached the conversation with such warmth, openness, and humour, which made for an incredibly enjoyable conversation. In this episode, we discuss some of the many great stallions that have formed part of their respective careers, some of the highs and lows with those stallions. We discuss both of their learnings from their time at Luger Beerbaum Stables, their ambitions and challenges, and their advice for young riders. On my previous visit to your stable in April 2022, we sat down to record this interview for the first time. And as I mentioned, due to an issue with the podcast recorder, unfortunately, the recorder recorded 50 plus minutes of complete silence rather than the amazing conversation that we had had. So we're 2.5 years later, and I'm very, very grateful that you have both given up the time to do this again. I did want to leave some time both to get over what happened, but also to make sure that even though we're discussing some of similar topics and themes, that the questions and the information that we discuss is still fresh. Marco, something that struck me when I was at your stable the last time in April 2022, it was the first time that I had met you in person, and you made a statement. I think you were maybe surprised because it was a breeding podcast, and you said something like, "I don't know anything about breeding." But actually, the careers that you both have had and the stallions that you have had those amazing careers with have had a greater impact on the breeding world than the majority of successful breeders that know a lot or think they know a lot about the sport horse industry. And I think that's what's incredible, even though that you don't breed mares, as far as I'm aware, you don't have mares and foals at the stable. What do you have helped those stallions to do, and then what they have done for the industry? You don't have to have a direct involvement in breeding to really impact breeding. So that's where I think it's particularly interesting. And even researching for the last interview in 2022 and going through the list of stallions that you had both ridden, then the offspring of stallions that you had both ridden, some of the stallions the two of you have ridden, but like Montender, Cornish Obolensky, Numero Uno, Van Gogh, Spartacus, Satisfaction, Contabellini, Lord Pezzi, Calestus, briefly Katoki, Staccato, Pirigu, and actually both of you had written Satisfaction and Contabellini. So that's what I mean by what those stallions did, what their offspring have gone on to do, what their grandchildren have gone on to do, has been really, really incredible. If you could add to that list and you could take any young stallions that are competing at the moment, either nationally or internationally, what's the first stallion that comes to mind that you would love to add to that list of stallions that have been in your string over the years?
Emmy Tashkalon.
Is this just Chestnut?
Yeah. Yes.
Mine as well. Yeah.
Quite simple. It looks like a super, super nice horse to ride. Maybe if there's something you would like to have in a little bit better way, he's not the most speediest one.
Yes.
Absolutely classical to ride, but a horse with such an overview and who does things so easy in that young age, looks to me like, if you now say this, I didn't think about it before, but that is one of the stallions I would like to add on that list. And then you forgot in my list, you forgot actually at the moment Karajan. It's also beating.
But that's your in your current string, I guess.
Yeah. Like, and he's Kanan, Verdi, and then Cornet. So in the end, it's a little bit like you said in the beginning, that my sentence, or what I always say, because people ask me also about breeding, what kind of mare is good for which stallion, you know, and I never made my mind up about it. That's why I said I have no idea about breeding, really. Knowing that I rode some of the most important stallions in our breeding, or in our, yeah, at the moment, horses who are, you know, how can I say, the best breeding stallions in the world, you know, or most successful breeding stallions.
I think what I had said at the time in my response to it was I would approach it in a different way, or think about it in a different way, because as breeders, we love opportunities to talk to the riders or the people close to the stallions, because you know what's good and bad about the horses. So that's often the information that's hard to see, because when you have good riders can make good horses look great, or normal horses look good, or cover up a lot of things, and not in a malicious way, not just with your skills and how you've produced the horse. So for us, a lot of the time as breeders, it's to try and learn about what are the natural qualities and strengths and weaknesses. And then we can decide, okay, well, our mare needs this or our mare needs this. So I still think it's so useful to have conversations and get opportunities to talk to riders that have such experience with these stallions. When building partnerships with these horses over the years, is it a very different approach that you have to take with the stallions versus the geldings or the mares? Or is it more each horse on an individual basis? Like, is your general approach when you get a new young stallion very different than a new young mare or gelding?
I think the gender is, it doesn't matter. It's really, like you said, it's an individuum, and it doesn't matter if it's stallion, gelding, or mare. It can be a very difficult and sensitive stallion, very easy mare, but it can also be the other way around. It has nothing to do with this. And I think what I saw always with Marco, and what I did myself also, we never said, "Ooh, this is a very important breeding stallion, and we have to be so careful. We don't go to shows unless everything is really perfect, and then maybe we go. And if they have one down, it's a catastrophe," or something like this. We did the same job as we did with other normal horses. We didn't make a difference.
Something that really stood out to me on the two visits, I know when you're looking at them as sport horses, you're saying you treat them all the same, but I think something that was very special the two times that I visited your stable was thus seeing how you approach Staccato and Pirigu. You know, now that their careers are over, I just thought that was really special, because sometimes it can seem like riders have a horse and then the horse is retired or it doesn't work out and it goes somewhere else and everybody moves on and everything's moving so quickly, but that they were still so important to the stable and how much you cared for them. And I know you've lost Staccato since I visited last, but I thought that was really special, and there was a special feeling, and to have them around, I thought was really, really nice. With all the horses, even that I mentioned in that initial list, and of course, it's not just about the stallions, but obviously they're the ones as breeders that we're going to be most familiar with. But I'd like to know for each of you, what's the horse that taught each of you the most, or the ones that made the biggest impression or learnings throughout your career?
I would say the most success or the medals in the beginning of my career, I won with Montenda. But Cornet made me feel or get used to the other side of the show jumping world. Also with Montenda, I had good rounds and not so good rounds. But with Cornet was a little bit the other extreme, that it was the rounds were not bad, they were a disaster. And going to the Olympics, for example, when I look back to Hong Kong, and then standing there in the middle and the horses going up, and as a rider you feel you are completely lost, and you have the situation is going out of your hands. And then later on, after years, then having success with the horse was so you I really with him I really learned both sides of our sport, how hard it can be to fail. Yeah, with the other horses, sure, maybe if you have one down or too many, the people are disappointed or you yourself are disappointed about your round. But to having to fail like this, that was something until then I didn't know, and was also a new feeling for myself, and I learned a lot about that.
Eva?
Of course, I learned the most from Staccato. I got him when he was 3 years old. It was the first young horse that I got at this time. Before, I only rode older horses that knew everything and I could learn from the horses. And Staccato now was a youngster. He was very well educated by Joachim Winter, the rider from the Hanoverian Stud. But yeah, I went on with him then from the age of 4 years old. I was by that time in Ludger's stable. I was really lucky that I could learn from Ludger and I could learn from the horse. And yeah, then I grew up with him together. I did both Bundeschampionat, and then when he was beginning of 8 years old, we did our first Grand Prix in Frankfurt, for example, and then all the bigger shows that were coming. So yeah, I learned a lot from this horse to go from 1 meter classes to Grand Prix of Aachen.
What was the moment with him that you knew you had something very special?
Yeah, right in the beginning. When I got him and I was in Ludger's place, they were training for the European Championships in Mannheim. It was 97. Staccato was 4 years old and I was jumping him, and Kurt Gravemeier, the, how do you say, Bundestrainer,
Chef de l'équipe.
the chef d'équipe, he was there also training for Mannheim, and I did small jumps with Staccato, and Kurt thought we were joking because I always jumped small cavalettis, and Staccato jumped 20 times. He jumped like 1 meter 30 high or something over a cavaletti, and again and again and again. This was his way when he was so young and fresh. Then he always over jumped completely, and yeah, I mean, I don't say that this was good or that you want this on a young horse, but I knew this was quite special.
That's something that I've thought about at different times, and it came up in conversation, particularly in September after Lanaken, and we were discussing different young stallions and how, as breeders, we're also caught up by the show. But are horses like that very hard on themselves? How do you manage that? Because if a horse is giving that extra all the time, is that a challenge? Does it take more of a toll on their bodies?
Yeah, for sure. It's not, like I said before, it's not really what you want, or that I say it is good. You have to work on to reduce this power, or to make it really calm and make small jumps and really quiet everything, because otherwise, yeah, it's hard on themselves, on the bones, on the tendons, on everything. It's really not what you want. But on the other hand, I mean, it's good if you have it in the beginning. It's easier to handle than the other way around.
Because that's one thing that, and again, I can only watch from videos, but that right throughout his career, that he was still such an incredible trier. But how long did it take for you to get that where obviously you still want that, where he really, really wants to try and really wants to do a good job, but that you have it in a more calm or consistent way? How long did it take you to get to that point?
I think we never came to this point.
Okay.
Okay, it went much better, but he was always a little bit like this. And this was always, if he had a problem, this was the problem, that he was over engaged. And this was hard to handle also when he was older, but for sure when he was 7, 8 years old, it got better. It was not then that when he was really fresh, he still did it. But when he was normal in work, then he didn't jump like 1.30 meters over in Cavaletti anymore. Mm-hmm. Then it got more normal then for sure.
Okay. Marco, you alluded to it with your answer to the horse that taught you the most, where you saw the good and the bad. And I think as a lot of us as breeders, especially outside of Germany, most of us became aware of Cornet when you were at the top and you're doing Olympics and you're doing 5-star Grand Prix and that. But for the people that are maybe less familiar with the beginnings, and I know this is something we discussed in 2022, but would you mind taking us through the story of your first show with Cornet and how that went? Because the challenges were not just something that came in later life. At least he let you know fairly quickly.
When I look back from the beginning, Cornet was already a superstar before he came in our stable. Mm. He was very expensive at the stallion auction, that 2.5 years old. And then he was already in everybody's, his name was in everybody's conversation about stallions. So we heard about this horse right before we got him. And then the first time I sat on him, you could feel that there's similar to Staccato. You could feel that this is a special horse, but you could also feel that he has a special character, mm-hmm. maybe a little bit different to Staccato. Staccato was sometimes, he had too much power and you had to try to control the power to get him a little bit more focused and concentrate on things coming in the ring. Cornet was just, yeah, I can say this, you don't have to take it 100%, but he was kind of an asshole in the beginning, character-wise.
Staccato not.
No.
But this you could also feel, but you also felt that this horse has an unbelievable jump. And the feeling was, from the beginning on, very special. And then the first official, it was not a show, but it was a presentation that was part of the deal, was made by Ludger. It was in Münster-Handorf, a stallion presentation in the indoor. That was the first time that Cornet was under the saddle somewhere else being presented to spectators. So this was part of the deal that Ludger had to do it. And Ludger was doing it and then was also okay. And then I took over the reins. And after working for a while and knowing from Kai Legis, where he was growing up, that he is at home, that he's calm, but when he comes to a foreign place, that in the beginning he is very, he can be very fresh. So knowing this, I prepared our first show, going already to different places, and there I always know when he came down from the truck that he was quite of interesting in other things. And also you could feel that even though you had him on the hand, that he was somewhere else with his focus.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then he was also getting quite big and he was fresh. And so knowing, having all these details, going to the first official show with him, which was also a qualifier for the Bundeschampionat,
mm-hmm.
as he was not a German horse, the qualification for the Bundeschampionat was not of importance. But he needed to get some points to get the allowance to breed. So this, well, in general, was a quite important show for us. So we just went with one horse there, my best groom, Gusti, at that time. He was a strong Hungarian, boy. So we came to the place and we took the big truck, one horse, big truck, to have everything, to have space, to have. So we went into the corner of the truck parking where nobody was, where we were alone, putting the truck that also Cornet was unloading him, could not see any other horses. So we were prepared well. So lately, then we took him down from the truck and he was fine. He was a little bit interesting and watching. And then my groom, Gusti, had him on the launch line. And I said, listen, Gusti, when I have my foot in the stirrups, just leave the launch line and let him go, because you could not stop him. It was easier when you try to sit on him that he can maybe run away, but he then just, then he was fine. But when you try to control him, that he should stand still while standing up on him, it's got even worse. So my groom did what I said as soon as I had my foot in the stirrup and wanted to take the other leg over. Cornet, stand up, like straight. Gusti left the launch line, and then Cornet was going on two legs, like 10 meters for sure, 50 meters. I had problems to keep my balance. I was holding myself around his neck with my arms. But like I said, we put the truck in the corner of this truck parking, and there was a wire for the sheeps, where normally, when sheeps. There's not a show, sheeps, no?
Sheeps, yeah.
Kaffee, yeah. So this little wire, which was, I knew that it is there, but cornered, and he was going on two legs with a neck like sky high. He didn't see this wire, and he came straight away in front of the wire. He came down. And then we flipped over, and I was flying to one side, Cornet was flying to the other side. And then I just remember that this big white horse stood up and passed me, cantering, tail up, head up. And then there was another wire to a outside field. And I just saw him jumping over this wire, and this wire was maybe like 1 meter 20, 130. And he was jumping for sure 2 meters. Unbelievable jump he did, landed in this field, and then he just ran away from all the other horses, from all this truck
just,
parking.
Just yeah? Stop. I have to interrupt. This is the answer to your question when he knew that he had a special horse.
Exactly. That's what I'm wondering. What part of you was annoyed and what part of you was impressed?
Yeah, yeah. In that moment, this jump was amazing. And then right in that moment, Kai Leges called me, and because he was the guy where he was going up, for him, he was selling the semen, and Cornet was already unbelievable horse. And he was waiting in the warming up area.
In the VIP?
No, in the warming up area, because, you know, I had still, I don't know, 15 horses to go. And then he called me, Marco, where are you? And then I just said, come here and get your fucking white horse. He's in the field running away. And then I remember that he was on the phone. He was so shocked. And then he got a little bit panic. And then he came. And luckily, there was like a kilo, half a kilometer away, there was a field with horses inside. And he went there. And so we could catch them there. But in the meantime, you know, the martingale, the bridle, everything was broken. So we catched him, took him back to the truck, fixed the bridle, new martingale on. Then I launched him for 10 minutes. And then I got up on him, which was in that moment then fine because he was a little bit more tired. And then I did two classes in a row. And he was, I think the first one he won. And the second one, where he needed his points for the stallion thing, he also got his points. So everything in the end went okay. But I sat 2.5 hours on that horse. I didn't get back down anymore because I was so worried to go up again. And that was my first show with him. Afterwards, I mean, the story is... It's so lucky how we were. I mean, what could have happened to the horse? What could have happened to me? Nothing. The horse was completely fine. He didn't even have a scratch or anything.
Only the martingale.
Only the martingale. And the bridle. Also then, what he did there, running in this field, coming back, then I launched him. Then I sat for 2 hours on the horse. He jumped two classes in a row. He had so much power, but over the years, it became better. So then I knew that it was always only the first time when you then once have been there in this place and you get down and get on him again, he was okay. But the first years at shows, when it was a little bit crowded, and it was always, you had to be careful in the beginning.
And am I right in thinking that you had some useful vaulting experience when you were a child?
Yeah,
Yes.
yeah. You did voting.
I did vaulting, yeah.
All in preparation.
In that moment, maybe it helped.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And maybe it kept you alive. The thing was, like you were saying, the fact that from the approvals or from the auction, that it was already clear to people that there was something quite special there. Like, I think maybe normally, if people had any respect for their lives and their safety, they'd probably say, I'm done. Send the horse somewhere else. But you, I guess, what in that moment, what made you want to keep going with him, or did you have a choice?
Okay. This question I wasn't really asking myself, because first of all, we had this contract with his with the owners, and second, it was just an amazing feeling jumping this horse. It was so outstanding in the ring or at home, doesn't matter. That you knew as a rider, okay, this is a young horse and he's a stallion, and it, for sure he's difficult, but somehow you have to get him going. If you don't really try hard, even after this first moment we have at the show, to then say, no, we don't go on. I was way younger. Maybe now it would have been different, I don't know. But at that point, I didn't really think about it. Just try to go to as quick as you can to the next show. And then to the next show, to keep him going, and to educate him, because he was such an outstanding jumper. So in that moment, there was no question to maybe change anything. Just one direction forward, and keep going.
Had you ridden anything that felt like him before?
Yeah, not completely like him. Every horse is different. But I was already lucky in that moment in my short period at Ludger's Place that I had some outstanding horses. I mean, my first horse I rode the Nation Cup with was P.S. Priamos. He was 17 at that time, but he was still an unbelievable horse. He was with Ludger fifth in the World Championship in Rome. And he won a lot with Dirk Hafemeister. Maybe you don't remember him because he was not a breeding, he was not a
He was
stallion.
girling.
He was a gelding. But he was a freak, that horse. Unbelievable. And still with 17, what the way he was jumping, the way he was doing the first fence or the first cross you do in the warm-up with him, then I had Montender when he was young, when I took him over from my brother. He was also super jumper, and Cornet was a little bit different, but the feeling was maybe even a little bit better. So I had already some outstanding horses, and then Cornet came. And then after that, or in that time, I was really lucky to have a lot of special horses. I mean, Cash, for example, he was not a stallion, but was also one of my best horses I've ever sat on, huh? So, yeah, I had a lucky show jumper life so far.
With the stallions that both of you have ridden, like I said at the beginning, you've ridden a lot of different breeding stallions, but then both of you have ridden some of the same stallions, and then both of you have ridden offspring of many of the stallions that we talked about. Which of the stallions stamped or gave their offspring most of the same qualities? Like, which are the ones that really, really passed on their traits, good or bad, particularly good, that their offspring were most like their father?
I had many young staccatos that were quite similar to him. Also, this a little bit over engagement, really awake, absolutely special front technique, the front legs. This was for sure with staccato, and then also many perigueux that were so careful and with such a good interior really that also the young ones from him, the offsprings, they really always wanted to do a good job like himself. So careful and focused. Yeah, both stallions, I would say.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
and we might have discussed it a little bit in 2022, but I think what's interesting hearing you talk different times about Pirigu and Staccato in terms of what made them great, they both seem to share such similar qualities. But then it's also interesting that Pirigu is out of a staccato mother,
Yeah.
that I don't think it's a coincidence.
No, absolutely right. Périgueux had many of the qualities from Staccato. He's absolutely not a really different horse. Yeah, you are right. He also is a little bit similar for sure. Yeah. And I think Marco's horses, the Cornet line is completely different from my Staccato and Périgueux line. They are really different horses, those two stallions.
But I think Cornet, from all the stallions I had, he is the one who is the most successful in his breeding career, but also giving. I mean, when I come nowadays to a show and I see a horse going, I can tell you straight away
It's a
it's a
Cornet.
Cornet, from the face, from the gait, or if you see a jump, you can very quickly see, okay, this is it's a Cornet, and this is Montender. He was not breathing that much, so it's difficult to really judge this. But he was also the one who was covering the most mares, no? By far, Cornet.
Cornet,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, you're right. And even you had Numeruno van Gogh, you had Spartacus Satisfaction, by
Yeah.
Staccato. But you're right. It is probably the one that it's the most obvious that
Yeah.
when you see them.
Numero uno, for example, this is a little bit of fantastic or interesting thing with breeding. When I rode this horse, he was not the one who gave you the most copious feeling. He was careful. He was very nice to ride. Normal size horse. There were some of his offsprings who jumped the biggest tracks in the world, and he himself, no chance, even though I was young at that time. And I was quite, this horse, he could not. He was a very nice horse, but up to a certain level. Some of his offsprings, they were just incredible jumpers. No, No Mercy from Christina Liebherr, that was a
Freak.
amazing, it was an amazing horse. Then from Leon Tyson, he had
Yeah, you
this
Tyson.
Tyson, yeah, and there were some others.
Yeah, at one point there was
Outstanding,
three.
outstanding horses,
Yeah.
but he himself, this table here, was already a challenge.
I know I've discussed with Eva about Pirigu and Staccato and the heart and the willingness and that kind of that they would really fight for you. And I think you mentioned before about Pirigu, like naturally Pirigu shouldn't have been able to do what he did. You know,
Yeah.
that his heart and his mind just brought him so much further than his body should have allowed him to. And I'd say it was the same with Staccato. Like, was Staccato maybe like 15-2, or was he 158?
No, he was 163.
Okay. So yeah.
He was huge.
Yeah. Okay. But from the stallions that you have ridden, Marco, which are the ones that stand out or that had those qualities, those really strong positive internal characteristics that really, really wanted to do the job and really, really wanted to work for you?
Satisfaction. Yeah.
When he was on your side, yes, but was also not so easy. We also struggled a few times,
Yeah, but only in the
but
beginning.
yeah, but he did also some with that horse. You could feel that trust and partnership can do special things. He had not the most scope, but when he was on your side and he trusted you, he was blind on one eye, there were some things coming together, then he maybe didn't have the best childhood,
Okay.
some bad experience in or maybe not bad, let's say not positive experience in his life as a young horse. maybe also, you know, made him being like this or behaving like that. But that was something special, winning with him one of the best World Cups in that winter season with this horse, and knowing that he is only doing it when he trusts you and when he is going with you. But then he was jumping the heart out, and he was doing everything for you. The others, most of the other stallions I had, they were in general were just good jumpers.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was sometimes you just had to get the focused on the poles with them, that they are, you know, that they're as a stallion, that they are not
distracted.
Being with
everything
their head
around.
Everything mm-hmm. around. It was sometimes a challenge. But the others, they were for sure more scopy than Satisfaction was.
For example, Conte Bellini, I think he was from the talents, what he could jump and everything. He was an absolutely outstanding horse.
Mm.
Yeah. But he was absolutely not so interested. Like, for example, Périgueux. If you had the talent and the scope and everything from a Conte Bellini, and then the interior from Périgueux, this would be way best horse in the world.
And soundness is soundness is also.
And there we need a third one.
Yeah, soundness also a big effort. Spartacus, for example, was a big heavy horse, but super nice to ride, very classical, a little bit close to this Hermitage Cologne, but just not sound. So, and then when it comes to the point, the horses have somehow, maybe they don't feel well, then they're also not jumping good enough. But when everything was in order, I also had some really nice rounds with that horse.
You've both been based at Lurker Beer Bums. I'd say, Marco, you for the longest, were you 15 years?
15 years, yeah.
And Eva, how long were you there? Was it two or more?
3 years.
3 years, okay. Looking back, what are the things that really changed in you by being there? What were the biggest learnings or the things that you took with you from being in that system or in that environment?
To be so precise, I would say. And you don't go as a beginner to Ludger Beerbaum Stable. I did not, and Marco also not. We knew before how it is going in this sport, and that you have to be very, very, very busy. And that after a show Monday morning, it's normal to sit at 8 o'clock on the horse again. This we knew before. This we didn't learn at Ludger's. But this is one thing there. They are so focused and busy, ist fleißig, ne? Oder ist da ein anderes Wort noch?
Hard workers.
Hard workers. But also to be so good prepared to think about the horse's soundness and everything that you have a goal, that you know this is the show now where you want to put your focus on, and then you have a plan and you just do it.
Yeah. There's not so much to add, but what I would like to say is that in general, I learned to have a plan and really, you know, in the week work for this plan you have in the weekend, but then also be able to change it.
Yeah, and this is really special on Ludger. Then he changes everything, and it works.
Yeah.
And as if it is the most normal thing in the world.
Yeah.
And this is sometimes as a student, it's not so easy, because you think, but we said something like this. And then completely he changes, and it works exactly. Yeah. He takes the right decisions, and
he takes the right decisions, and he also gives you a good feeling that this decision is right. And he also himself, I don't know how many times he went to a show and then having a plan before the show starts with which horses are going, which classes, and then after the first class, he changed completely his plan, and in the end he won the Grand Prix with a horse which was normally not planned to jump even a bigger class, you know. And also, which is outstanding, I find still, for sure he has good jockeys and good riders, but he makes them he makes them go for it.
Yeah.
And he has a somehow an unbelievable talent to motivate people,
yeah,
and growing over sometimes even over what they can normally do. No?
Yeah.
If they want to, the people, no? If that's one thing you need to have.
Yeah. This same with the horses.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Looking from the outside in, it is really, really incredible what has been achieved there. You know,
yeah,
just in Luker's career alone was already exceptional.
Yeah.
But then what he has then achieved with the riders that are currently with them, or
yeah,
what the riders that were with them and
yeah,
have gone on, like you guys, like what people have achieved. It's
it's just outstanding. And that is not, this doesn't happen by accident.
Yeah.
You know, this is, you can, Markus Ening is, for example, for sure also a good trainer. And he had also many riders already in his stable. Christian Ahlmann, I can name many,
yes,
many others. But, and now and then they also had a rider who was successful. But what he made, Lutger, that's really something
outstanding.
Something outstanding and
yeah,
special. Yeah. No doubt about that.
On the last visit, yeah, in 2022, Eva, you had mentioned that you had no more interest in going to international shows, and you were just going to focus on the younger horses. And now, roll on 2.5 years, you are out of the sports stable altogether and 100% focused on the family business. What motivated you to take that decision? And did that come easy in the end?
No, I think this was a little bit, there was not really a choice. We have quite a big company with 150 people working there. We produce ceramic tiles. And my dad is 83 years old now. And by that time, 2.5 years ago, it was, I think it was needed that I went there. And yeah, let's say like this, there was not really a choice. But like I said, it was also, my motivation was not so high anymore to go to shows and to do it again and again and again. Also, I didn't have so special horses by that time, so it was not so difficult for me to take this decision. Yeah, this is to answer your question. And it's a new challenge, and I'm quite happy with it. I always say in this business now, it's a different education that I have. It's not normal that I went to university for a long time and I studied economics and this and that. I did a very short while. But what I learned in the horse business, it also helps me in our business there today.
Yeah. And are you still riding for leisure, or have you stopped?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hear now, you didn't hear it, I won the Grand Prix of Rheine-Wadelheim.
I can't say I'm familiar with that.
No, it's okay. It's okay. No worries.
Maybe it was not the rumors in Ireland.
No, but I'm happy that we do this still together here, that Marco is here on our place and that he gives me horses to ride. And I really still like it. On the weekend, I do it. Sometimes I went to shows, and I had, unfortunately, I have a very good 7-year-old horse, and he broke his leg. He was on the paddock and he broke, the hind leg, this little bone on top of the hoof, this bone.
Fessel.
It's past.
Pastern.
Pastern. Yeah. But he got screws in, and it looks really, really good now. Last week, the screws went out, and it looks absolutely possible that he comes back to the sport. And this happened. I went to a few shows with the horse, and it got really, really good, jumped one S classes already. And then it was planned that Marco takes him to Balve, to the young horses class there for the German championship, and then also to Aachen. But yeah, 1 week before Balve, it happened on the paddock.
That's very disappointing.
Yeah, yeah. But maybe we will see now. It's on a good way. Maybe he's absolutely, he's coming back to the sport.
Marco, is it fair to say in some of the seasons, and maybe even when I visited the last time, you were probably in more of a like a rebuilding phase, you know, trying work your way back maybe more consistently in the five stars. Is that a period that you found difficult to stay motivated? Because I imagine when you have a team of horses that can do the five stars and do the championship and do the Nations Cups, it's probably easier to keep the motivation. But when you're trying to build and put a string of horses together and kind of fight your way back to be more consistent in the five stars or get into the teams, did you find that period more difficult or more difficult to stay motivated or focused?
I don't really have a problem with motivation. This is not an issue for me at all. The only thing is, doesn't matter if it's young horses or older horses, you need to see you need to see the quality and to have a benefit out of it, that you see in the end the sun is one day shining. Doesn't matter if it's, I also like jumping or going with young horses to a show as long as these horses are of interest.
Yeah.
And you have the feeling maybe one day, I don't talk about a superstar, I don't talk about the feeling from Cornet or Montenda or these other horses I had, but just a good, interesting young horse can be interesting for the sport, can be interesting for selling, what I also like to do, to make some business. Doesn't matter with horses or with trucks, whatever, I like selling something. I'm not a horse dealer, and to say that, with my little number of horses, I sell now and then, but this is only only a few. But I like doing this. I like producing a horse, working with them. If it's 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, more years, it doesn't matter. And then one day coming to the point, either be successful in the sport or then sell the horse. It's not my goal to be one day again in the team, you know, for if there is the right horse, for sure you want to go there. But then for whatever reason, the horse gets sold, I will not be disappointed and cry the whole day because the horse is gone. Don't get me wrong. I have, how can I say, I like my horses, but I yeah. also like to do the business. And I have to say at the moment, it's getting through the past years, it's getting harder and harder to get, for me, as I'm not buying these horses myself, I get the horse from other people. It's getting harder and harder to get these good horses. Doesn't matter if it's young ones or older ones. As there are, I think, many, many in our country who are doing it in a very good way. Maybe I'm also getting a little bit older. I'm not so interesting anymore. Like, for example, at this time now, Sophie Hinners, Richie Vogel, David Will, Katrin Eckermann, all these younger or young people, they are so successful, hard workers, and then also people go somewhere else. You know, this is so for me, it's not easy to keep a little bit the standard of good horses in my stable. I'm working on it, but it's not easy.
Yeah. And on my last visit, Eva, I think one of the things that you had mentioned was, I guess it can be very tiring month after month or year after year going to shows, and there's so much travel. And eventually there comes a time where you don't want that anymore. But for you, Marco, do you still enjoy that? Do you still enjoy going to the shows around the world, or are you getting less enjoyment from that?
I had a little bit the same what Eva was saying, that doing this every week, you get a little bit tired. But like it was now in the past, let's say one or 2 years, especially this year, I did less shows. But for example, this year in the beginning of the half season, I was in one of the global tour teams. Mm-hmm. I could go to really nice shows. I was in Doha, I was in Shanghai, I was in Madrid. Then I could go to Aachen this year again after a couple of years not being there. And then I really enjoy that. And not having the next weekend, again, a big show, because with the lower number of horses, I can do maybe two big shows in 1 month. And the other 2 weekends, I'm off or I go there with young horses, maybe to day shows in Germany, national shows where I sleep at home. And this, I have to say now, this mix,
yeah,
I really liked this year. And now we have to see how it goes on. As I mentioned in the beginning, for the rest of this season, I can go to, if the horse is sound and everything is fine, I can go to some good World Cup shows, which I also really like to do. And then the year's almost over. And then I hope that my best horse comes back in form, to then having for the next season two good or similar horses on the same level. And then also to choose the shows which I'm going to do. And not every weekend, I have to say this, I like.
Yeah.
Even though I also have to mention, now being in the weekends at home, then it comes the question, what am I doing? Do you understand?
But then he washes the trucks.
Yeah, I wash my cars. Yeah. But it's when you are used to be every weekend or every day is a full program. And then suddenly you have maybe one weekend off, another weekend off. Then you really have to find something, make a plan. Otherwise, you with that number of horses at the moment, I'm half day, I'm done. So I have half day, I have time for myself, which is a new experience in my life so far, because I'm getting to 50. And so far, there was not this experience that I, which I'm enjoying now at the moment. So we will see what the future is going to do.
And it's important to look busy, because otherwise you'll be asked to help in the office or in the business.
Exactly. Yeah. I did a few times already. I asked a few times if he could do this, but so far he's not interested.
No.
It's a pity, because I think he would also there, he would do fantastic job.
You've done, is it two Olympics?
Yeah.
You've had Olympic medals, European Championship. I'm sure you've done many of the things that you set out to achieve at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Is there still something, a show or a class that is really, really still high on your priority list that you want to win, or something that you want to achieve?
Yeah, for sure. I think it was this week I had a bit of time, what I just mentioned, and my iPhone is full of videos, and over the years, so many videos. So I started as my, I had no Speicher.
It's full. How do you say it?
You have no space.
No capacity anymore. Yeah. So I had to delete a couple of videos and photos. So I went through my list and I found the, because I wrote last week, I wrote the Nations Cup. And then I was looking back when it was the last Nations Cup I wrote before. And it was in 2017 in Calgary, the Nations Cup. That was my last Nations Cup I wrote for Germany. And I found this video from that weekend with that horse, Klinur. And I also watched the Grand Prix. I was clear in the first round, and I had one stupid mistake in the second round. And that year, Philip Weishaupt won with a gray horse.
LB Conval.
I think that was the year Philip won there. And there were only, I think he was the only clear, or there was only two clears, or so a low number. I finished, I think, fifth, sixth, seventh, something like this. But when I see this round, having this fence down, I could cry, because I was so close to getting something exceptional. I don't know if I would have won that class, but I was really close to it. But maybe in that moment, I was not.
You didn't want it enough.
Maybe not focused enough, not being whatever. But for example, Calgary or Aachen, this is something special.
It's funny, when you asked this question, I was thinking about Calgary for what he would answer. Yeah. And so let's hope that he gets the chance to go again to Calgary.
You need a special horse also for that class there and for that show. But for example, that horse also there in the second round, the double of water, He was not even forward with his ears. He was not spooky or looking at all. And I was just did one line, not I didn't ride perfect and touch one down. And I mean, sixth place in the Grand Prix of Calgary is also good, but you know, nobody ever, it's just the first thing is the win is what is counting. So we will see. If with this will happen, it would be fine. And if not, I'm also...
Life goes on.
Yeah, I'm also a happy guy.
With your string, did you say you have about 7 horses in work at the moment?
Yes.
And can you talk us through some of the horses that just stand out that little bit extra?
Yeah, there's this Carayan.
Yeah.
Breeding stallion as well, 10 years old. And then Aventador, which is... He was a stallion. We castrated him last year by Armitage. He won a 4-star Grand Prix last year, was also placed in 5-star Grand Prix. Very special horse. Little bit problems with the soundness now and then, what took him out now and then in the sport. So I hope that he stays in the sport now. And also Carayan is coming back by beginning of the year to have these two horses that can both jump bigger tracks. Then I think I have for next year, if they both are going well, I think I can do some better shows. These are the main horses I have at the moment. And then there's a big gap, some interesting 6 years old, which are completely different way of jumping, way of how they are to ride, but can be something for the next years, for the young horse classes. I will, at this moment, not talk about Grand Prix horse, but something with a future.
Are there any young stallions in your stable at the moment that we as breeders should be looking at a little bit more carefully?
No, I don't have any stallion left, no. I just have Carayan at the moment as a stallion, and all the others are geldings. I'm not even having a mare. No, only geldings. There's one Périgueux, one of the 6 years old is a Périgueux. He was a stallion. I rode him as a 5 year old. He was doing well, but then by end of the season, I convinced the owner to castrate him because doesn't want to breed. He's not a breeding stallion the type is not a breeding stallion, and he was not really focused. So I said easier to castrate him for everything. It's easier. If you don't really want the breeding thing, I think then the stallion doesn't have to be a stallion, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's no point. You mentioned that you didn't have any mares, so I'm going to ask you both similarly to the question that I asked you about the stallions. And I would like an answer from you both, even if you're not competing a lot at the moment. If you could have any mare that's on the circuit at the moment, if you could pick any mare to have in your stable, who's the mare that you would want?
Oh, that's a good question. I have to think about who is riding a mare. Who?
It has to be one from now, otherwise I would choose Ratina.
Like, is there one in the sport at the moment? It can be young or old, but just one that's competing at the moment that you think that's my kind of horse, or that's one I'd love to have, or...
I didn't look, I didn't watch Clip My Horse for a while, or didn't go to shows. So I'm really, I cannot answer this. I'm too far out.
I'm just thinking which of the horses who are successful at the moment, which of them is a mare? I don't really know one at the moment. Anyway, if there is a mare, which I really like, I also had some really nice mares in my life. It's a little bit the same with the stallions. If you have these kind of horses a little bit on your side, they are also fighting for you. I would never, I would, if somebody offers a mare to me or gelding or a stallion, I would never choose in, I just go for the stallion or I just go for the gelding.
The gender doesn't matter. Yeah. In recent years, you have had different talented young riders based at your stable. Is coaching something that you're doing a lot of, or what percentage of your time or is that taking up at the moment?
I was doing it now and then as I'm one of the coaches from the Rolex Academy. So they send now and then people to me. For a short period, I like doing it. Let's say for 1 week, 2 weeks, if then they are staying here and you work together, it's fine. On the long term, having somebody with many horses in my stable, it was as I not having enough space for that. I was not really enjoying that, and I also didn't wanted it. For the future, it's a different story because now, as I have less horses, I could imagine that maybe someone is here also permanently with a string of horses, renting some boxes, and then training together. But
Yes.
this, what I was doing in the past, is very extreme. That means I'm there every day. Every horse almost we do together. This I can do for a short time. I can guarantee to do this kind of training, but this is not possible over long term, no? Which is also not needed. So I like having a few days intensive, and then that the people, the young people, then try to do it by themselves. Yeah? Instead of having somebody who's telling them every day on which leg they have to do the racing trot, that they also get a little bit, or they start thinking by themselves while riding. So I will guess that in the future I will do it more, yes.
Okay. Normally, how I end each of my interviews is I ask my guest or guests that what advice would they offer to a young breeder? And typically, the interviews are with breeders that I ask, what advice would you offer to a young breeder or someone at the beginning of their breeding career? So, but I first will start with, if you were giving advice for young riders or if you were speaking to your younger selves, starting out in the industry again, what advice would you give to those young riders?
To open eyes and ears, and being open for everything, and trying to not only be focused on the riding, that is one part which is very important, but also be open for everything else what you can learn if you get the chance to learn. I often see young people at the moment or in the past years that they just riding is important, but nothing really else beside the riding. And I think the feeling of the horse, the shoeing of the horse, the vet, also to be there, see how are my horses moving, how are they trotting, discuss with the vet. Everything comes a little bit together, and trying to learn as much as you can as a young rider, to maybe become then a better one than others. Riding is one part, no? But it's a main part, but other things are also very important. And to the breeders, I would only see that it's, in my opinion, I mean, that's nothing new, to see what kind of mare do I have, and is it really worth breeding with this mare, or maybe try to not only see what is the stallion about, to see a little bit more what is my mare about. And what was she doing maybe in the sport, or how much talent does she have? What are her benefits? To be maybe a little bit more focused also on the mare, not only on the stallion.
Yeah, I think there's not much to add. I would say the same. It's really they should focus, the young people should focus on the horse, on the soundness and everything, not just the riding and the jumping and the going to shows, but how to bring up a young horse, the dressage work, the basis. This I think is so important, and I see that it's getting more and more. It gets lost.
But on the other
It's
hand, I also have to see that through the past years, how many good, talented riders there
yeah.
are. That's incredible. That's really incredible. I find the riding, how much better it became through the past 20 years since I'm in the sport, or in the bigger sport, let's say, or 20, 24 years it's now. It's unbelievable, I find. When I, and especially also in Ireland, I mean, compare the citizenship from Ireland and see how many good riders they have. I don't know where are they all coming. Are they all riding or in the school? I don't know if the
is it in the mother milk?
Mother milk or also now in Spain, I've seen some Irish young riders I've never seen before, and they are just so basic. How can I say?
Talented.
Nature,
yeah.
Right?
Natural
riders, and with feeling and with. Like really, really good. And for, even though now it's Irish, but I don't know how this is possible. So very good. There are many people, but it's also much harder for these young ones to get into the sport.
Yeah.
That's on the other, that the contrary. There are good, many good ones, but the amount of riders has become so much more. So it's also way harder to get into the sport than it maybe was 25 years ago.
And also to keep good horses, huh?
Yeah.
Because there are not so many good horses, and then so much money is paid. So if you don't have a big sponsor or...
Yeah, or somebody supporting you, whatever.
Exactly, then it goes away.
It goes away.
And this is, will always be like this. Without a good horse, you cannot be... successful in the sport.
You're only a walker.
Yeah, no.
Because that's what I was thinking as you were talking about these good young riders, that unless, yeah, you're a wealthy family or you're very lucky that has a good sponsor, because like what you were saying, Marco, about your current string and how difficult it is and how competitive it is, there's so many options for people now. You're an Olympic medalist and it's still difficult to get enough good horses.
Yeah.
No matter how proven you are, it's still difficult. There's no
absolutely.
There's no magic pill. Like there's I want to thank both of you. Really, really thank you for doing this again. And I know, like I said at the beginning, I think when I asked to do an interview for breeders, your reaction was about the breeding part. But for me, it's really important that if us as breeders just talk to breeders, it becomes sometimes a bit like an echo chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think it's really important that breeders hear from riders, breeders get to hear firsthand experience of these famous stallions, the good and the bad, because not all breeders have the time or the flexibility or the freedom to go to shows or the confidence to go up and speak to riders or to really go and find the information like this. So I'm hoping by doing podcasts like this, it makes it easier for those stories and that information to get to breeders. So I really, really appreciate that you've not only done it once, but that you've done it again.
If you enjoyed this episode or any of the previous episodes, why not send it to a friend or share it on your social media?